שיר עילוי נשמת אפרים בן אשאן שם.
We left off last week, we were talking about the Malach of Elisha. Just to recap for a moment, we mentioned that there's a major machlokes at Tanoi, then a machlokes of Rishon and Paskin, as to what is the critical moment in terms of Elisha. Everybody agrees that if a person takes flour, water, kneads the dough, mixes the dough, turns it into a loaf of bread, that's for sure Elisha. The question is, where along the line did a person violate Elisha? According to one opinion in the Gemara, it's called the Sinas Amayim. As soon as the flour and the water, or any other sour or liquid for that matter, as soon as they come into contact with one another, that's considered to be the moment of truth, that's considered to be the point of Elisha. And according to the second opinion, Ad Shegagava, the only Chayav, once it reaches the point of Giba, once it actually literally mixes it, kneads it together. Then we had a further question, within the view that the only Chayav Ad Shegagava, what if it's something that can't be begabel, something that's not neat, and so that doesn't lend itself to gibel? Does that mean, so you're not chayav altogether, what the Rambam says, that if it's something that is not about gibel, so it's impossible to be chayav? But do we say, no, the Tosfos claims, if it's a lot about gibel, then everybody can see to the first view. Everybody accepts that the mir nesina samayim is chayav. So we have a couple of variables here, and again, different opinions in Tanon, different opinions in Rishonim, questionable what the halacha should be. Why is this relevant in terms of practically speaking? Nobody's going to really go ahead and do a real act of Elisha. So this is relevant in the following sense. The Gemara tells us in the end of Masechta Shabbos that if a person does a shinui during the moment of truth, during the moment of Elisha itself, so under certain circumstances that's going to be permissible. Now whenever we speak about doing things that are shinui, it always gets problematic. Usually the rule of the Shabbos is things done derech shinui are not deraisa but are still derabanan. And every once in a while we find that it becomes mutar lechatchila. And again, it's not always clear when we should make that rule, when we should draw that distinction. We've talked about this in the past. And again, it's not clear what the rule exactly should be. But when it comes to Elisha, the Gemara does seem to indicate this idea that doing a shinui may be effective. So the question is, well, doing a shinui may be effective, but you have to do the shinui at the correct moment. So when is the correct moment? So going back to what we said, is the correct moment the moment of Nesinas Hamayim? Is the correct moment the moment of actual mixing? So if you subscribe to the view that Nesinas Hamayim is the moment of Elisha, then the Shini would be required then. If you subscribe to the view that Gibel is the moment of Elisha, then the Shini would be required then. So basically, the Poskim tell us that we're not quite sure what the answer to that question is. Since it's a Machlekes, a Tanoim, Machlekes Rishon and Paskin, so the only time we will ever avail ourselves of a Shini during Elisha is we're going to insist what we call a double Shini. And we're going to have a shinui both b'shas Nesinas Hamayim and b'shas Gibel in order to be effective, because we want to cover ourselves on all bases. So that's how we're going to work with that assumption of the Maisa, that we're going to look around for shinuyim that are acceptable, but we're going to have to look for two different shinuyim, because there's two sets of times, two different parts of the process that may be important to reckon with. So let's assume for now we're looking for a shinui in terms of Nesinas Hamayim. What would that shinui look like? What kind of a shinui would we even dream of? So the Gemara talks about the only possible shinui of Nesinas Hamayim is to do things out of order. Namely, if during the week you would normally do X, then on Shabbos you have to do Y. So what would that mean practically? So the Gemara is talking about very specific kinds of foods. So the particular food that the Gemara is talking about in terms of Elisha, the Gemara says, well, if you put the solid food in first, and then you mix in the liquid afterwards, that's pretty silly. That's absurd. Nobody would ever do that during the week, and therefore that would be a permissible on Shabbos. That would be the acceptable shiur. So the post can point out that the Gemara was not giving you an absolute claw across the board. It depends case by case. So there are some kind of mixtures where it's normal to do that during the week. So if it's normal to do that during the week, then you would have to flip around. You would have to do the opposite on Shabbos. So it's not written in stone. It's not halacha Moshe Mesinai. What's considered to be normal, what's considered to be abnormal. You have to take a poll and figure out case by case. So that's something that gets tricky because there are some kind of mixtures where it's not clear what the Seder Advarim is. There is no absolute Seder Advarim. So that becomes a little bit problematic. There's absolutely no Seder Advarim. During the week, some people do it one way, other people do it another way. How can we possibly call doing it abnormal on Shabbos if everything falls into the category of normal? So that's much like you said, Postman. Some Postman throw their hands up and say, well, if there's no way to determine what's abnormal, then it's not impossible to make a shinui. And if it's impossible to make a shinui, then it's awesome. Then finish it, the discussion is over. And others are willing to go and make it and say, no. Then Chazal talk about almost the objective shinui. And it's Chazal, when they said they're putting the solid food in first, they're putting the liquid in, so they were saying, that's the shinui until proven otherwise. If you happen to know for a fact that that's the normal way of doing it, so then the shini would be flipped around. But what you don't know, if there's no clear cut machine in one way or the other, so that's objectively called the shita. It's very hard to understand why that should be so. It's very hard, quite frankly, to understand this whole shita in the first place. But again, Gemara speaks about the possibility of machine, right? And the post can basically say, if it's clear what the seder advarim is, then the opposite is considered to be a shita. And if there's no clear seder advarim, then it's unclear what exactly, if any, the shita should be. But this shita only works the gabi nesidus amayim. According to probably most of the Rishonim, this shita is almost irrelevant, because the real moment of Lisha, according to Ruben the Rishonim, is the later point, the point of Gibel. Most of the Rishonim pass like Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda. So we have to do the first shita, because we have to cover our bases, according to Rabbeinu Baruch, one of the Rishonim followed the view of Rabbi Danasi, that the Siddur Samayim is important. But we have to look to the second stage as being the much more important shita.
But it helps you get a shita in the way you pour?
So it's interesting because the Gemara doesn't mention that as a shir. The specific shir the Gemara talks about is Kesed Yaseh. The Gemara talks about flipping the order. Again, this whole shiri stuff is very, very unclear what this whole story is all about. So what possible shir would be acceptable for Shas Gibol? So the Gemara talks about a few possibilities. So the Gemara talks about that instead of mixing something in a normal fashion, so if I had a flour of water or something, I want to really mix it together, so I would mix it in that motion, that kind of motion, move my hand around. So the Gemara talks about chesed erev, about doing a crisscross motion. So that's not so normal. This, that, this, that, this, that. It's going to take a lot longer. Because Anish says that when the Gemara speaks about of chesed erev, so the Gemara means that every time you do one direction, you have to then take your hand out of the mixture. So you do one way, then you take it out, then you go again, then you take it out, then you go again. So as we said last week, if you start now, so you'll probably be ready by next Shabbos. So if you take a long time, that's an abnormal way of doing things. That's one kind of a shinui. So I think Gemara speaks about other kinds of shinui b'shas gibol, the shinui of mena'er, you give it a good shake. Instead of mixing, give it a good shake. It's a great shinui. The problem is it may not work, so that's why it's a good shinui. So again, you have these kinds of shinui. The Tosfos talk about a shinui with one's finger, instead of using a kli, doing it with one's hands. So a whole array of different shinui that could possibly be done b'shas gibol. So again, we're not sure which stage we have to do shinuyim on, and we're not even 100% sure what the shinuyim are, but you have to aim for both of these kinds of shinuyim. You have to do a shinuy b'shas amayim, and an appropriate shinuy b'shas gibul as well. Then to make matters even more complicated, the Gemara in the end of the Shabbos throws at us a distinction between different kinds of mixtures. The Gemara says there's a mixture that's called the blila ava, and a mixture that's called the blila raka. A blila ava means thick. A blila ava means like a doughy kind of a mixture. A blila raka is more like a batter, more like a pancakey kind of a mixture. Something that pours, something that's a little bit lighter, a little bit less, a little bit thinner. So the Gemara seems to present to us that when do we say that lish is a violation of Issa Malacha in the Torah? That's only when it's a blila ava. The original lisha that we always look at is the model, the lisha of the Mishkan, the lisha of making bread. That's the real lisha of the Torah. So that lisha was a blila ava. Anything short of blila ava is only in Issa Midrabbanan. So there are many, many poskim who say that b'medivar mamurim that Chazal gave us any kulas in terms of lisha, all these strange kulas. You do a kilech, yeah, you do it in a strange way, you do it in a mishutik way. These coolers only make sense when you're dealing with something which is not a deraisa anyway. Since the whole thing is only a derabbanan, it's not already begins to make sense to us. Something is only also a derabbanan, and you're doing the derabbanan, kilech, yeah. It's not a rule across the board. There is no cloud. You can do derabbanan, kilech, yeah. There's no such principle. But sometimes, chazal will make it. So if it's only a derabbanan anyway, it's only blue l'racha, and you're doing kilech, yeah, then we can understand why it's not done. But to do blue l'ova, even kilech yad would be problematic. And not to say no, not to say that if Chazal amhatred derech shina, he said derech shina is mutter legamre, even if it's a blila ava. That's a further factor that's drawn into the picture. So all of the above that we just mentioned has this play out in terms of practice. So we'll give an example. As we mentioned the initial last week, the most common example that meets all these criteria is the issue of making the babysitter one shams.
Why did they be shorter that the lachos are based on the asiyas and ishman?
What was the right? So it was some kind of making of the dyes involved, some kind of a lisha. So, yes, I guess that was some kind of a thick consistency. You want to know what in the world that was? Your guess is as good as mine. Although I do remember when I was, right after we got married, so we went to New England for a couple of days, and there was this place called Sturbridge Village. So it's like one of these colonial, recreated places that the Shiva Life was left in the 1700s. So there was a whole demonstration there about dying, about tzviya, about some of them. So I was fascinated. There was absolutely nobody else who could have cared less about that. But I was very, very interested. I was asking a lot of questions. I was trying to figure out what exactly tzviya looked like in the Mishkan. I remember there were three things that caught our attention there. There was that demonstration about tzviya, and then they were showing us an umbrella from the 1700s. And I was so excited because there's a tshuva in the Nei Yehuda about opening and closing an umbrella in Prague in the 1700s. I can imagine in New England in the 1700s, wasn't that all that different from Prague in the 1700s? And you can't figure out what in the world an umbrella looked like to figure out whether it was a malacha or not a malacha. So I was very, very fascinated. Again, nobody could understand why I was so interested in that topic. And the third thing that was fascinating, my wife, which was, and I was, that all the women there were all walking around with their hair covered. Even the single girls were all around their hair covered. So we had just gotten married not that long before, so my wife asked them whether they also cover their hair when they're inside the house also, only when they go outside. So she wanted to know whether they followed the Zohar, whether they followed the Torah, the places. So each their own. Okay. That was our first and last trip to So using baby cereals as a good model for this discussion, so those who may remember from the days of baby cereals, again, I'm not so up to date with the baby cereals. I remember when my kids were little, so we used to start with those little, they still sell them? They still have baby cereals? Do they still use them? The rice cereals, they don't use them anymore? I still use Mochadna. My grandson just started to eat a little bit, so I was asking my daughter about whether it wasn't the babysitter. So she said, no, we don't do that anymore. They have different approaches. So I don't know. No, still off? I don't know. She told me that they weren't. You see what happens in a couple of years. Anyways, what? I don't know. She told me we weren't to. I'm not holding the details. I remember that when my older daughter, was a baby at that age. So I remember one Shabbos we were in California, and I saw that my mother-in-law was feeding her some cholent. She was about 7 months or so. I said, what? I said, the doctor said we have to do it. So my mother-in-law, she said, I grew up in the old Yerushalayim. I said, we didn't even have no baby cereals. When a kid was old enough, they had children. Okay. Old daughter as well. Okay. But baby cereals are still a good example to use. So the question is, let's say a person wants to make a baby cereal. So it involves taking some powdery stuff and mixing it together with water, making it some kind of consistency. And that smacks of Lisha. So how can a person go ahead doing that? So the first thing you have to ask yourself is, well, let's do a shinui. So which shinui do we have to do? So we have to do a shinui b'shas nesiyas anayim. The question is, what is the shinui b'shas nesiyas anayim? So you have to ask yourself, well, what is the seid hadvarim normally? So you answer me, those of you baby cereal recently. What's the normal way of mixing a baby cereal? Put the powder into the water into the powder.
Water into the powder.
Who thinks water into powder? That's normal. Who thinks the other way? Was no idea. Okay. All right. So I think you're right. Okay. That the normal way of doing it is you put the powder into the cup and then you pour the water in. So if that's the case, then you would have to do the opposite on Shabbos. And some of the Sfarim of Shabbos, they write that it's not clear what the order is. Again, I don't know much of what the facts are. They claim it's not clear what the order is. And then the question is, what do you do? Assuming those facts would be right, it's not clear what the order is. So then you have different opinions. So some say, well, if it's not clear what the order is, then you have to do the Chazal's order, which would be the other way around. If it's not clear what the order is, then some possibly say you can't do anything and finish. And then there's another interesting psaf that appears in some of the English form that says, if you're not sure what the order is, then the keveya, the paisek of the shayla, is the back of the baby cereal box. So look at whatever it says as directions, and whatever the directions say, do the opposite. So there are three different possibilities what the psaf alok should be. I think that the facts are correct, like you're saying, and therefore, those who want to do it and want to do the sinus amayim in the opposite way that they normally do during the week, I think we have a right to do so. But then you come to the more complicated part, and that's the shinui b'shas gibel itself. So how would you pull off a shinui b'shas gibel? So you could do, again, some of the official ones that Chazal speak about. You could try to shake it. Good luck. You can try to shake it. It's not going to happen. Or you could try to do shasti to Erev. Instead of mixing it together, you could try to do it with a crisscross motion. If you go the Chazanish's route, it could take you a long time. You can have the Chazanish's route, not clear. Another possibility is, and this is something maybe we should leave off the tape, is to do it with your finger. So I just recommend, if you do it with your finger, so wash your hands, put on a glove maybe, do something. Not like a winter glove, like a sterilized glove or something, and try to do it in that fashion.
So again, you need a regular shape of mixing at that point?
Yeah, so then if you're using with the finger, that's probably enough of a shita. So again, different possibilities. But let's not forget that all of the above may not even work if it's a blila ova. It may only work if it's a blila raka. So how do you make something into a blila raka? Very simple. You add a lot of water. So if you add a lot of water, a little cereal, so then it's more horrible than thick consistency. then it's merely a blue raka, and then it would be mutter according to almost everybody. But if you deal with the way you would normally make it, in a thick consistency, that's a blue ava, that's like a comfy dough kind of a thing, and that would be problematic. That's what the Shmir Shabbos writes, that lechatchila, those who have to make babysitters on Shabbos, so he recommends that they should make it in a blue raka type of manner, get a lot of water into it. And again, you could try, baby probably not going to eat it, not probably not a strict fan of it in the first place, but if you can, you should try to make it a blue raka. And if you can, so then if all else, and do the tushinuyim. And if it's impossible, the kid's not going to eat it, so then Shmir Shabbos is mekel, Shas of Chak, like those who hold, that even Blila others would be mutter if you do the double shinuyim. So again, we're not thrilled about the shinuyim of the baby cereal, we're not thrilled about Blila others in the first place, but if you're really, really stuck, you'll be permitted to do so. Those who are not able to do the Blila Rachas, it's not going to work. Those who are not comfortable doing Blila others, you can have good luck and you can feed your kids, cholent to whatever other things are going to make them up. But don't run into problems of tochen just because you think you're avoiding cereal, so then don't go back to grinding the bananas. That's maybe more problematic, again, depending on what you think about. That's what we spoke about in the past. Again, baby foods are complicated. To prepare your own baby foods at Shabbos, it does become a little bit complicated. And yet, if it's mutter. Except according to the teachers who say that you can't do it. But otherwise, it's okay.
I can't use like another cleat and a line and a ratio of that. You just try not to get your hand dirty. Not using a spoon. A spoon would be dark all the time.
I don't know. It's something that's hard to be madame and milsa. What is it? She goes, not a shin, not 100% clear. Chazanish has a line in this sugya of Lisha where he writes that what's called the shinuim, these things. It's not so simple what's called the shinuim. So a few shinuim that I mentioned, but Chazal, again, it's hard to know. It's hard to know what the answer to that question is. Up until now, we've been talking about issues of Lisha, and we're trying almost to avoid Lisha by all these kunsim of double shinuim, etc. But then there are other kinds of mixing of foods together that may not be a problem of Lisha altogether. So there is an issue that it's an interesting machlokes that according to some posts, it's mamish, this is a gomer, the raisa, and according to others, it's mamish het gomer. It basically breaks down the difference between the chassidim and the misnagdim, and that's the making of all kinds of different salads and Shabbos, in the sense of tuna salads and egg salads, etc. So what's the din? Can you take an egg, and just the chopping up of the egg itself is not such a big deal, even though we spoke in the past about tochen, we said that the tochen of foods, even if it applies, most probably doesn't apply to things that don't grow in the ground. So there's no real issue of tochen on eggs, but the question is, a person wants to chop up the egg and now mix mayonnaise in. You want to put mayonnaise in and make the whole thing into a mush into an egg salad, so maybe one could argue that's mamash lisha. You took little pieces of egg and you took clumps of mayonnaise and you used it to combine the two into one unit. That's a potential, raises a serious problem potentially about the melacha of lisha. So in the misnagdish world, that was usually assumed to be a problem. It's not a very big problem. So the only way to do it would be to do it the almost a derech shinuyim that we spoke about in the past. The problem is that we're not so thrilled doing a derech shinuyim because the result it's going to be is going to be a thick doughish kind of thing. You have a thick blila ava, and a blila ava lechachili you really shouldn't be doing. And even if you want to say about bimekel, like those who say blila ava would be alright, you would have to do a double shinuyim. So what would a double shinuyim be? So I think here also it's pretty obvious when you make egg salad. So how do you make egg salad? What goes into the, what do you put in the plate first? He's the expert that you throw the mayonnaise, right. So what you have to do is you have to take mayonnaise, plop down a clump of mayonnaise, and then throw an egg pieces into the mayonnaise. That would be the shinur in the derech, in the Nesidus Samayim, or the equivalent of the Samayim. Then you'd have to do a gibel, kilyachayad also. How are you going to do that? Mix it, you know, shake it together, not going to work. You're going to crisscross your hands. As they say the joke about the people eat the egg salad with their hands. Minig was saying to be a Dani. Grandfathers ate with their hands, we eat with their hands. So now Nuchum, we have to make the egg salad with their hands also. So it's going to come a little bit difficult to try to pull off a double shinuyim on something like egg salad. But again, if you go with that mahalach that we're saying, the egg salad is a very, potentially very, very serious salad. Egg salad, the tuna salad, all these salads are potentially a very, very serious problem. And then you had a whole different approach. I was in the Chassidish world, so they were very, very make on this. Those who know from the Shtiblach, Moshal Shulisa, there's always exile. Exile was made. They make it on the spot. It wasn't from West, because they make it on the spot. So the question is, what the heck there? What happened to the Yisrael Bisha? So Shlomo Zalman is quoted by the Shmir Shabbos Yuchas is giving a whole series of different possible kulas to defend this practice, this minhag that existed in Europe of making the egg salads and tuna salads. I mean, tuna salads in Europe, but egg salads at least on Shabbos. What is Arut Kula? So one of the important kulas is the following. The Rambam says that if you look through the sugyas of Lisha, so we usually speak about things that were not really edible, not really usable in the state that they were before they were mixed together and formed into Lisha. Let's say, for example, flour. So what do you do with plain flour? You can't eat plain flour. You have to mix it together with water, make a dough, and then bake the bread. Well, it's even the case of the baby cereal. You can't eat the powder of the cereal. You have to mix it with water and then mix it together to make it into a cereal. That's the malach of Lisha. Over here, you can eat eggs. You can chop an egg up and eat plain eggs. There's nothing wrong with that. So why are you putting the mayonnaise in? You're not putting the mayonnaise in to create something that's usable, to create something that's edible. The goal of the mayonnaise is to give it some taste. Instead of eating a plain egg, so it doesn't schmear so well on your challah, whatever. If you want to give it a little bit of a kick to it, so you throw some mayonnaise into it. But that's what's called an halacha, not a malacha. That's called a tikkun eichel bi'alma. That's called just fixing up the food. That's not called dech malacha. That's called just making food. That's not called malacha. So that was one interesting tzad. So that would potentially be relevant to other cases. Also, if everything was edible, all the ingredients were edible beforehand, so according to that svar, maybe there's no, maybe there wouldn't be malacha altogether. That would be an interesting finish. Again, there are other potential kulas that Shulam Zalman calls also.
What about the mayonnaise?
Yeah, but the goal is not really the mayonnaise. The goal is you use the mayonnaise to stick together the eggs. You're not serving mayonnaise as a main dish. There used to be a joke about somebody. Somebody once said that you don't know how bad things were in the old days. We were so poor. We used to make mayonnaise sandwiches, and we didn't even have bread.
If you can't do a shame because of the nature, like let's say those yogurts where you pour like the topping, that's a problem.
That would be a problem. Yeah, those things would be a problem, right?
If you mix pour the yogurt into the
yeah, to mix right, the mixing things into yogurt, if it clumps together to become one thing, that would be a problem.
Wait, but I think
the post talk about like you put like sugar, you put things that really becomes clumpy into one thing together. Yeah, it's just
throwing stuff. Once you mix it, you can't separate out the pieces.
No, but it doesn't. No. But the piece of chocolate don't become next to each other. I don't think so. This is a general question about how much clumpy things have to be. Let's say, LaMarshall, you pour salad dressing on salad. So, a new chum, you can't put salad dressing on salad. Chashal of Lisha? No. Because the dressing doesn't make the piece of salad stuck together. We had a shayla years when we first got married, we lived in the Heights. So, my wife used to make coleslaw. So, she'd make coleslaw on Shabbos. So, she would throw the mayonnaise into the coleslaw, mix it together. So I always assumed that was the same as salad dressing. The coleslaw didn't get clumped together. It was just a piece of cabbage that had some tasty dressing on it or something. So not familiar what the dressing was, whether it was more of a mayonnaise, more of a salad dressing. I always thought that was okay. So once we had a bachur ate at our house for Shabbos meal, and he saw my wife was putting the mayonnaise onto the cabbage. So he very respectfully asked me, because it's not about Lisha. So I explained to him, I didn't think it was about Lisha, because I think that the pieces are pretty separate and distinct. I don't think they really clump together. I guess in theory, you put a lot of, I don't know, whatever it was. I was looking at the main, you pick up the coleslaw, it's not clumped together. So I saw the whole meal, he was very uncomfortable about it. He was like playing with the coleslaw the whole time. So I said, okay, we'll ask around on Sunday. We'll take some coleslaw from his medicine and we'll get some opinions about this. So I remember walking around with a bowl of coleslaw. I brought it to Rabbi Shach, I brought it to Rabbi Luke, and I asked them, I wanted to see what they thought about it. And I think Rabbi Luke tasted it. And it was good. I don't remember exactly how, but I think the mascara, I thought the mascara's advar was that it was still mutter. But I remember that this guy was still, some guy was still chuckling a little bit of his mashup about it. So I told my wife, I'll stop making, at least when you invite this guy over, stop making coleslaw. So I told him we should stop making coleslaw. So I don't know whether, I think we've gone back to making the, I don't remember checking in the house what the policy is. But I remember for a time we had stopped making the coleslaw Shabbos because maybe it was a concern. But I don't know, you check yourselves at home and see what you think about it. Okay. There are other kinds of things that also are potentially quote unquote mixed together. Maybe one would think, our potential problem of the Lisha, and that's initial. Let's say you want to make a hot chocolate, you want to make a chocolate, and you want a cup of coffee. It's a new chumra. That's considered to be Lisha because you're taking the little particles, the little grains of hot chocolate, the grains of coffee, instant coffee, you didn't have to that's what it's the next to melacha, and you're mixing it together with the liquid. So isn't that a bomb of lisha? So the Tosk can say, no, that's not a bomb of lisha, because that's almost the antithesis of what lisha is. Lisha is, you're taking two things together and you're trying to make them thicker. That's the goal. You're trying to create that goal of thickness. Here, you're not creating a thick, pasty kind of a thing. Not only are you not creating a blila hava, you're not even creating a blila racha. You have a liquid in front of you. So what you have is you had a liquid and I have another liquid. So you used to have a cup of water and I have a cup of coffee. You used to have a cup of water, I have a cup of hot chocolate. So that's not considered to be lisha altogether. There's nothing that's really sticking together in any shape. Just the solid is dissolving into liquid. That's not called derech melacha or lisha bechlal. So the Chazon Ish had a ha'ara that he thought that maybe when it comes to hot chocolate, that may not always be true. He said, because when you make hot chocolate, so some of the chocolate, again, leaving out the bishul issues, some of the chocolate clumps together on the bottom, and that is a solid-y kind of a thing. That would be like, almost like making a chocolate paste on Shabbos. That would be a problem. So the Chazon Ish thought that maybe that would be a concern. So one could question that on a couple of different grounds. First of all, is the Metzius correct? Is it really true that it's making a chocolate paste? So the, I don't want to be Motzilah, especially the day after Pasha Shlach, but Motzilah is on hot chocolate to Eretz Yisrael. So I'm assuming the Chazon Ish must have written this when he lived in Europe, so I'll make fun of the hot chocolates in Europe. So it could be that back in the 1920s in Vilna, you know, the Chazon Ish is sitting, so maybe the hot chocolates weren't up to par. Maybe they didn't have Nestle's, Hershey's, or whatever hot chocolates. So if you're dealing with some kind of a Hamish, brand of hot chocolate that doesn't really mix too well, so maybe that would be a concern. Number two, even if it's true that you do get these clumps of chocolate, the question is, do you really want that? That's what your goal is. So maybe one can argue that's almost like a psigration of Michalai. So maybe it's a psigration of Michalai. Abonelai, you thought it gets into a whole labor discussion. Unless one argues that it's Michalai, unless you want that those clumps. So I once put this question out to, if I'm not mistaken, it was also when I used to teach Hilchos Shabbos and Stern. I always try to get surveys of interesting pieces of information. So I threw this question out to the women in the class. Said, who here, when they make a hot chocolate, likes to have some clumpy stuff at the bottom? So I was very surprised by the answer that many people do. They're the same people who eat raw pasta from a couple of weeks ago, so they're the ones who like the chocolate to be clumpy. So, in Ochanam, if that's what you want to do, if your goal is to make chocolate and clumpies on the bottom, and that's really happening, that's a problem. That's a real serious problem. So you gotta start mixing your chocolatey stuff with your fingers. So I think for the regular people who are having regular hot chocolates and a cup of coffee, I think anyone has a pumpy coffee at the bottom, I would hope not. So I think that we don't consider that to be too much of a concern. But again, if you're really intending on making hot chocolate in that manner and it's really accomplishing that would be something to be concerned of in terms of Lisha. So we, not yet done for the Shia, but we made almost a siyum on the Malacha of Lisha, which leads us into the next Malacha. So we're going to start the next Malacha. I guarantee we will not finish this next Malacha before the summer, that's for sure. And that is the Malacha of Ofer / Bishul. So this is the longest of all the Malachas, at least for our purposes. So we'll start a little bit. I think people will be around next week for the most part. Okay. Visiting there. Does that affect anybody? No one went to camp yet. We have visiting people who have left. I remember in my days, you had to at least stay in camp for a couple of weeks and you were like, you're visiting them. Now they're visiting them before camp starts. Okay, so we'll start a little bit Bishul now and we'll try to take it into a little bit the next week. But again, we're going to have to push off the Ruba of the Bishul until after the summer. When we speak about the Malacha Bishul, so we're not even sure what Malacha to call it, because The Mishnah speaks about it in terms of the Malacha of Ofer. The Mishnah talks about it in terms of baking, even though the reality is that in the construction of the Mishkan, they didn't bake anything to build the Mishkan. What they did was they did Bishul, they cooked things to build the Mishkan. What they cooked was back to the Savamonim, back to the dyes. They had to go back to Sturbridge Village, figure out what they did. But they had to take the extract out of the dye, out of the herbs, to turn it into dye, to make the Pchelis, the Agamah, the Lashani, all those different colored things. So what was done was Malacha of Bishul. So the Gemara says, so why do we call it Malachas Ofer, if it was really Bishul? The Gemara says, Tana should do with the Pascha Nochid. That the Tana always uses the Lashon that's speaking about bread. Tana is focusing on bread. So even though, according to many, many of the Rishonim, bread was not really the factor, that wasn't really what the Malacha was all about in terms of the Mishkan, but just for our Lashon, so the Tana follows that idea of Sedu with the Pascha. There are other Rishonim who say no, that the reason why the Tanakh picked on the model of making baking bread rather than cooking is because that was important. It wasn't important in terms of the construction of the Mishkan. It was important in terms of the maintenance of the Mishkan, namely the Avodas HaMishkan, because there was a lot of baking that was done. You had to bake, particularly the Lechem Aponim. So the Lechem Aponim that was offered ever from Shabbos to Shabbos had to be baked. So there was a Machlekes HaRishonim, when we say that the Malach is a pattern after the Mishkan, which part of the Mishkan are we talking about? So Rashi always writes, it's patterned after the Malach is a Mishkan. It's patterned after the Parshias of Truma, the Tzav of Yachal Pekudei. It's patterned after the making of the Mishkan itself. And Rav Haigom says that it's patterned not only after that, it's patterned after any malacha that was involved in the actual preparation of the Avodah also. So whether or not they actually bake bread as the model of the Shabbos doesn't really make much of a difference. Baking bread on Shabbos is a malacha deraisa. It's clearly an av malacha. It's part of the malacha of Ofer. And malacha Ofer slash Bishol doesn't make much of a difference. So when we speak about malacha's Bishol, so we're talking about both Ofer, we're talking about baking bread, we're talking about Bishol, we're talking about cooking things, we're talking about Tzli, we're talking about roasting things, barbecuing things, we're talking about Tigun, frying things, basically taking any kind of a food and applying any shape or form of heat to it. So we're going to use the terms interchangeably. That's Ofer, that's Bishol, those are all potentially Shum Deraisa. We'll see as we go on with some of the intricacies of the Malacha, why it may become important for us to identify these specific actions, whether we're actually dealing with a bishul or an afia or a tzli or a tigun, etc., because it's going to become important when you begin to overlap. Let's say I have something that was at one time baked, can I now cook it? Something that was once barbecued, can I now cook it? Something that was cooked, can I now fry it, etc.? So it's going to become important to the sugyas of ein bishul acha bishul. But for practically at the beginning of the Malacha, it doesn't make much of a difference that any and every time that I take a inedible food, I'm being very careful what I'm saying, take a raw inedible food, and I prepare it to become edible, so that is going to potentially run into a problem of bishul. But we speak about bishul, so we're usually talking about bishul that's being done with heat. If I take a food and I don't apply any heat whatsoever, so presumably that's not considered to be bishul altogether. And this question opens up for us almost one of the first issues related to bishul. What exactly is the role of heat, and what kind of heat are we talking about? So the Gemara in the Mishnah, the third crack on the Shabbos, draws a distinction between different sources of heat. The Mishnah talks about what's called bishul ba'or, bishul using some kind of a fire, in contrast to bishul b'chama, bishul in the sun. Those are pretty much the only two ways of cooking things in the days of Chazal. And there's a third thing called bishul b'chama tveria. You're lucky to live in Tveria, the hot spring somewhere else. So that's the third possible way of cooking. So what's, if any, is the difference between these? So the Mishnah, the Gemara, spells out clearly that bishul b'or, cooking with a flame, cooking with a fire, that's for sure bishul. That's not to discuss. That's the bishul d'oraisa, leis van der pot. Nobody argues with that. Bishul b'chama, the Gemara says, is not so simple. Bishul b'chama is not a malacha d'oraisa altogether. I didn't say it's mutar l'gamra yet. I may say that soon, but not yet. The bishul b'chama is clearly not a malacha d'oraisa. Then the Gemara has an interesting machlekes atanoim. Where does bishul b'chama tveria fit into the picture? Does bishul b'chama tveria, if you want to take a raw egg and go up to tveria, put it up to the hot springs of tveria, will that be called a bishul d'oraisa or not? Is that closer to the model of bishul b'chama, or is that closer to the model of bishul b'or? The Gemara has a very, very interesting way of presenting what that machlekes is about. The Gemara says, well, where does this hot spring, what's the source of these hot springs? Is there a fire? Is there not a fire? So it's very unclear. I mean, we know scientifically what the source is. It's the earth. The inside of the earth is pretty hot. So the water that comes in from the inside of the earth is coming out pretty hot. So the Gemara wants to know, how does the halacha view that? Is that considered to be the equivalent of a bishul b'chama? Is that considered to be the equivalent of a bishul b'or? So the Gemara quotes a phrase, which again is very hard to understand what that means. The Gemara says that, according to one Tana, the reason why the water is so hot is because it's coming from Pischa Shal Gehenna, that the Gehenna fell to the ground, that the Korach fell into. So that's why the water is so hot, so that's considered to be like a fire in Halacha. And the other Tana says, no, that's not really true, that's not considered to be a fire in Halacha, that's like a chama, it's not a flame, it's not a fireplace, it's not a barbecue, that's like bishul b'chama. So again, that's a tricky Gemara for those who are going up to Tveria and want to cook their eggs on Shabbos. So that would be a potential nafkamina. But don't laugh at that nafkamina, because that may impact that other kinds of quasi-heats, non-flames. Source of heat that Chazal don't speak about, microwaves, things, solar heating, things of that nature. So we have a lot to talk about in terms of just defining what exactly the source of heat is all about. Remember, there was somebody told me that they were, someone who lived there at Israel told me that when they were a little boy, they remember they came to New York with their parents once, and it was Pashas Korach. And the parents took them into the subway, and they got so nervous, they start to walk down the steps into the subway, the kids start to shake. So the parents said, what are you so afraid of? He said, that's what I'm the Korach. They're afraid of what I'm doing. So Piska Shoga had him, that's what they were, maybe he was right according to that time. Anyway, so the first thing hopefully the next we will pick up on is what is considered to be the source of heat in terms of Bishul. This is going to have some very, very real nafkaminas ladina. When we talk about cooking, not just in regular flame, cooking with solar heating, cooking in microwaves. So hopefully that'll be the first topic we'll touch on a little bit there next time.